Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Cale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujeet Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 56, being recorded on the 11th of December, 2014. My name is Sujeet Mello. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my two esteemed colleagues, Cale and Evan. Guys?
Hi, this is Cale. I'm in the New York region, and I work with the Azure PaaS COE. Specializing mostly in application development and PaaS work.
And this is Evan, and I'm in Azure support, working in the Windows on Azure space, doing Azure networking and Azure Windows guest scenarios. And I'm down in the southeast, down in North Carolina.
Yes, your accent gives it away, Evan.
You know, I don't know whether to be happy or sad, because I've been down here 20 years now, so I've been down here more than half my life. No, it's coming right up on. I've been down here half my life, and I go home and I just don't sound like what I remember. It's
it rubs on you. What can you say?
It does after 20 years. I go home and they tell me I sound like a Southerner.
That's funny.
My friends down here just tell me I still sound like a Yankee, so can't win either way.
Anyway, so the general topic of discussion for today, we're going to cover something we haven't covered at all, I think, is Azure backup. Important topic, obviously, because of sensitivity around, you know, making sure the information is always available in a secure place, and having it shipped out to the cloud and saved off there somewhere is a nice thing to have, because it offers that off-site backup facility, which I think a lot of customers would love to see and have. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But before that, let's just get around to some recent announcements and updates. Let's see. So the general announcements that were made is live channels for Azure Media Services. I believe this is the technology that was used for the Olympics, right? And they're now making it available as part of Azure Media Services. It allows that kind of multiple live video feed to be broadcast to all your listeners, or in this case your viewers. So that's one of the things that is now available in Media Services. Then there's the high performance VPN gateway. And what is this, like a higher bandwidth gateway, or what?
Yeah, this is the standard. I think we call it standard, the old size, or the traditional size. We can support up to 500 megabits and 10 simultaneous site-to-site tunnels. Now, you won't get anywhere near 500 megabits with site-to-site, but if you were using something like ExpressRoute,
right,
you know, you could certainly exceed the 500 megabits. For the high-performance ones, we go up to 800 megabits, maybe 1,000 megabits. I think it's 1,000 megabits, and 30 site-to-site tunnels per gateway. So it's all about, you know, the ability to cram more stuff and more capacity into one gateway.
Okay. Great.
So then, that would be on the server side. It supports those high bandwidth, because, you know, typically it was like 100 meg or something, but that was usually limited by, I guess, the firewall or the device that we were using on the other side, plus the internet connection.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure of everything that throttles you down to 100 megabits on a traditional site-to-site from one place. I think some of it, like you said, it's internet, you know, bandwidth, plus it's, you know, you do have to stick it inside the tunnel, plus, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. The 500 is really about folks who are potentially pushing multiple streams through the same gateway. Right, it's really tough, I mean, because you're still not going to get more than 100 per site-to-site tunnel.
Right.
So, but now you can put more tunnels, so before you fill up your gateway. Because, I mean, really, and this isn't any great secret, but these these site-to-site VPNs are PaaS instances, right? And the smaller PaaS instances have less resources.
Okay.
So by bumping up to larger sizes, you get more resources. It means we can support more tunnels and more concurrent tunnels and more total bandwidth.
Got it. Excellent. Then there's a new SQL database public preview. It's kind of exciting, right? I don't think we've had a new SQL version or preview recently, have we?
We had some of the backup features come in there, like the higher performance stuff, but not like features and functionality like this. This is just pretty big.
This is pretty big, right? So, Evan, you were telling me before when we were talking about it before the show started. This is primarily to bring parity between the normal SQL Server and the Azure version of SQL Server. Is that?
Yeah. If you've ever done SQL Database, I mean, it does some really great things. I mean, you can scale out infinitely, and you know, most of your T-SQL comes across. But that's the kicker. It's most.
Yeah.
You know, you do things like XML indexes, you do things like CLR, things like that didn't work. And so it made it tough for a class of applications to get ported over to Azure SQL Database. And this new, I'm not 100% sure if we're changing the name or if it's just a different, you know, if this is going to become the way that SQL Azure is, right? I'm not 100% sure of that. But, you know, now we're going to have the ability to do those things. So it really becomes much, much closer in functionality to SQL Server on-premises or SQL Server in IaaS. So you can, that much more of your database layer can just, you know, cut and paste over to the database side, which right. that's going to be big.
I think so. A lot of people, I think, are holding back
on
adopting SQL Azure. And now those reasons for holding back are probably going to go away.
Yep. Yep.
Excellent. And then there's a new SKU, I guess, of SQL Azure, the S3 SKU, kind of a more cost-effective SKU for people. I think there was people want something in the middle, like a mid-level performance SKU of SQL Azure. There's an S3 version. I'm sure more details of that, we'll put it up on the website on our show notes. And the final thing... not the final thing, but the other important update that came out was this premium storage. I think we kind of talked about this before in one of our previous shows, but it's now a public preview. I think it was a limited preview before.
Yeah.
And this is the new SSD-based storage, right, for IO-intensive applications. So if you have blob storage today, which is on traditional disks, I think it's – how many IOPS is it capped at today?
Today?
Yeah.
500 IOPS per disk. So
per disk.
For your biggest VMs, you can go to 8,000 IOPS.
That's by striping it or
– Yeah, you do 16 disks underneath storage spaces.
Right. Okay, and now you can go up to
10 times that or no.
50,000 IOPS.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I mean, 5 to 7 times it. That's – I can't remember the last time I saw a SQL Server doing 50,000 IOPS. It's been a while. and less than a millisecond latency.
That's
the thing that, I mean, the IOPS kind of, I think, is cool because there are some applications that just do a ton of IOPS, right? Especially if you want to leverage a bunch of applications to the same SQL Server. But the latency piece is kind of the biggest thing that you really can't get around in SQL IaaS today. Where the typical latency is 40 to 70 milliseconds,
right.
Which on premises 10 to 15 is considered it's okay.
Right.
And here we're doing 40 to 70. Well, I mean 1 millisecond, you're now better than you are on premises.
That's amazing. Right. Now the one thing to note over here is that at least during the preview, I believe the premium storage disks can only be used with these new DS series VMs. The DS series, I think there's a special type of D series. The D series were the new faster series, right? I think.
Yeah.
Talked about recently. So those are the ones that can be used with this premium storage disks during the preview period. I think eventually, don't know for sure, but they may open it up to the other series of VMs as well.
Yep.
And then there's, well, I see a couple of other, I guess, relatively minor compared to what we just described. There's the Azure Site Recovery now in Azure which directly connects with Hyper-V. What does a change in the Express Route existing exchange provider in Brazil? So if you're in that part of the world, you may be interested in some of these updates.
Hey, one other thing, guys, on the SSDs that I don't know if you guys saw this in the news, but you know, we talked about SSD storage, and you know, a lot of the new machines and like the Surface Pro 3s and all these things have SSDs in them. But the myth or the thing that I'd heard before about SSDs was, well, they're not really that reliable, right? Because like it was like, yeah, they're really fast, but those gates wear out over time because of the way they work internally, the way that flash storage works. So I was always like, wow, that's pretty crazy because, you know, we do things like you can't do disk defrag and things with SSD. It just disables it. But then there was a lot of, you know, now there's a lot of disk trimming and things that happen inside of Windows. And so there's a lot of like writes going on that aren't necessarily you. So I was kind of like, well, I wonder what this means. Like eventually do these disks just start dropping off really quickly? And somebody just did this study on some new ones like Samsung and Kingston, I think they were. They did this crazy test where they wrote to them, and these are some of the latest technology ones. These things are insane. Like, they're basically, this guy says, you know, after he ran it on his desktop PC, he's been running this SSD, or his SSD in his desktop PC, which isn't even one of these, for like 2 years, and he said, I've logged, it's basically 2 terabytes of data writes over 2 years. But at the rate that these things will go, it would take 1,000 years for this thing to fail. I'm like, wow. So maybe I shouldn't worry too much about that, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think any of my data is going to have any relevance in 1,000 years.
So what you're saying is that the life expectancy of these disks is much higher? Is that?
Yeah, so basically the new guys, they said the test they did, they were up to the 2 petabyte mark doing writes, just nonstop, hammering these things, and they were still gone, no problem, you know?
That's impressive.
It's just something when you guys were talking about SSD, I remembered reading about it, and I was like, yeah, it's, I don't know if it was just a myth when they first came out or if that was true and they're just getting better. But
well, the I think one thing is that some of the SSDs, they do develop bad memory blocks, right, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And then you start losing some capacity, right? That is known to happen. So the effective capacity of the disk will reduce because it has to allocate. And sometimes, hopefully that's not something that's in use at the moment, so you don't get affected by it. But even if it's not in use, then it just doesn't show up on your available free disk. So the one side effect is that the amount of free space will reduce over time. But it's nice to see that it can take that kind of hammering, over and over again. It's a couple of other key points, which we talked about some of the preview stuff. I want to just talk about some of the stuff that was released this past week. The remote app facility, which I think we need to cover that in an episode. We haven't talked much about it. I think that's a facility that lets you host some of your commonly used LOB apps on Azure and access them remotely in some sort of like a terminal window, right?
Isn't that what it is? Yeah, that's actually one of the other leads on my team is the lead support guy for it. So I've seen all the training material and I'm trying to get ready for it. But it takes the RDS deployments that we've always seen people do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it basically makes it a service to build that RDS farm.
Okay.
For you. So you give it your image and say, hey, I need 4 session hosts or I need to – you know, I don't want my CPU any higher than blah, and the service will auto scale. I mean, but you don't have to worry about setting up your session hosting, setting up your connection broker, and all the nitty gritty of setting up that RDS deployment.
Right.
You just build your image, give us your image, and then we publish it. And there's the thing that caught my attention was not just does this work via RDP, but we've actually got Android, iOS, and Windows device clients.
Oh, so you can access these apps on any one of those mobile devices.
So, yeah, it really is about, I mean, if I understood the material right, I mean, there certainly is an expectation that a lot of the desktop clients will do this, you know, for like thin client stuff. But I, it looks like one of the big things that, that we're trying to enable that today is not a huge scenario. I know people want to do it, but is, hey, I've got my Android device and, oh, yeah, I need to get in and go into our proprietary fill-in-the-blank application that hits some central SQL server and do that. Now, because the other thing about Remote App is it can be tied into your Azure virtual network, which means you could be tied into your site-to-site, which means you can be back to on-premises.
You can come back. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a pretty cool technology, and it's gone GA this past week. We used to be in preview.
Yep.
So I think we'll definitely have to cover that in a future episode. And then the last bit of what I thought was exciting information is the announcement of the general availability of the Microsoft Azure for Government. Which I had read about this before, hadn't paid much attention to it, but since the announcement came out this week, I've been reading up on it. And so this is a special instance or special data center of Azure that is designed to fit within the stringent requirements of the government organizations, at least in the United States. And I was like, okay, what could be special about what's special about this? And it's kind of interesting the number of things that they had to do to make this, to call something like this Azure Government. First of all, there's a isolation of your infrastructure so that it's not as in the typical Azure world where your VM is next to somebody else's VM, and although it's screened off by Hyper-V or whatever the fabric controller does, here there's an even more deeper level of isolation between various instances, and this is to meet some of the standards of the U.S. public sector organizations. So there's that one level of isolation that's guaranteed. Then only a certain number of government organizations and agencies are kind of allowed to store their information or use this facility. It's not just open to everybody. There's, of course, special security and controls, including things like specially screened personnel, cameras, there's all this extra level of security that's around these operations.
Even though, so I'm actually one of the engineers that helps to support this. I'm an escalation point for it, and I had to go through, like, the FBI came in and they interviewed me and they wanted to know, 15 years of, somebody that's known me for that long, and it was.
Wow.
It was kind of a scary interview. I just had to go, where did I live 12 years ago? Oh, what was the address?
I don't remember.
So luckily, I've been married that long, so I was like, oh, I'm living at my house I am now. But if they would have gone back like 17 years, I'm toast at that point. So.
Yeah, exactly. So they really take a lot of extra trouble to background screen everybody that's touching any bit of this infrastructure,
yep.
Including the support, as Evan just mentioned. And then for now, this is limited to the United States, I believe. So much so that the infrastructure, everything, the data, the networking, everything has to reside within the United States. It cannot be out of this country. So there's that aspect that physically all the information is located here. And there is this business continuity section area that where they have to have redundant data centers at least 500 miles apart, and so on and so forth. And for now, this is going to be hosted out in the East region somewhere, because a lot of the government agencies are out here in Washington D.C. area. So that's something that's been finally released, and I'm sure. If there's anyone from a government organization that's listening to the podcast, they might be interested in this. Okay, let's get cracking on our topic of the day, or topic of the week, I should say, which is Azure Backup. Now, obviously, when I think of backup, the traditional backup done on an on-premises environment, you know, there's, I guess, a gazillion products that are available to do backup, right? I think Microsoft has a bunch of products as well, some built into Windows as well. And I think at the very minimal, what they do is they make sure that you got a copy of, a secondary copy of all your files. And as those files are updated, then the copies are also updated and kept in sync. That's kind of your basic backup facility. So Azure Backup, Kale, you did some reading in this area, right? What's special about Azure Backup here?
Well, we did, just to correct one thing, I think it was, maybe you weren't on that episode, by the way, Sajid. I think it was episode 34 we did one with Azure Backup. We had one of Evan's friends on here talking about backup, but some things have changed since then, right?
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the things have changed primarily. Well, there's been a bunch of changes, but one of the things, first off, just off the bat, was it's really recent. I think it was in the middle of November, is the availability of this in Australia. And Evan's sending me a message right now, but. So the availability in Australia to have the to do your backup stuff there, as opposed to just having it in other regions like the U.S. But one of the big things was the data retention policy, right? So it used to be a rolling 120 days, but that's been increased to 9 years. I think that actually happened, you know, before November. But it was that's a big thing, right? Because if people need to store data for regulatory things or something of that nature, where they need to keep those backups longer, and they're willing to pay for the storage.
Just out of curiosity, do either of you guys know? I mean, like, the 9 years seems like a semi magic number. Is that do you guys know where that? Like, is there some compliance thing that says 9 years somewhere that?
I don't know if it's nine, because when I used to work, when I did stuff with backup like this, and this was years back, probably around 2000, they were in that business, and it probably varies with line of business, but it was 7 years for, like, financial records.
Hmm.
But I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it is nine now or something. Maybe something changed. I don't know.
Well, it's probably seven, and they have probably put a little bit of buffer around it, I would imagine.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, You don't want to make it exactly seven, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. That's just a lot longer than 120 days.
Yeah, I mean, and let's just kind of clarify that, Kale, a little bit. So these are the number of changes that are available, right, for a particular file or folder. They can go back 120 days. Is that correct?
Yeah, right. So depending on, you know, like we said, it was a rolling 120 days, basically, meaning if something goes beyond that, that's a thing that's going to get overwritten. Whenever it would write up there now, it would have to take up to 9 years before it would do that.
Correct. And that, I'm sure that's something that you could probably configure in terms of the amount of data, because what this is going to do is that you're going to have that many more copies, and which means you're going to take up that more space in your Azure backup facility.
Yeah, I mean, but again, in Azure, storage pretty soon will be free, but...
Yeah, it's incredibly cheap these days.
I mean, what I saw was, just on Dave, since you mentioned the pricing, it seems like the first 5 gigabytes is free, which I thought was interesting. 5 gigabytes... a month, I think. If that's all you're backing up, you actually can do it for free. So I might just—it's a good way to just test it out, right?
I might have to move for my. I currently back my stuff up using a third-party tool to Azure Blob Storage.
Mm.
I may have to switch. I didn't realize the first 5 gigabytes was free. I might have to move over to Azure Backup at that point.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for businesses that are. You know, the traditional thing was tape, right? So years ago, you know, before we even had disk backup, you know, back in, you know, Windows 2000 days and even pre that, we didn't have disk-based backup, right? And most of the stuff had to go to tape whenever we did a backup, and then it had to be off-site, obviously, because if something happened at the facility. And so anybody, I don't know you guys, but I remember working in those days and carrying the football out of the building, the red case that had tapes in it, because... Mm-hmm. It had to be off-site, you know. You had to take it to another facility. Either somebody came and picked it up, or you had to take it off. But Those were quite the days, man. Like changing tapes out and waiting for that stuff to happen.
So now the way that it works is there is some piece of software that's running on premises, and we'll get to that. But that's essentially taking your data, and at some steady pace, it's sending it offsite into Azure, right? And storing it offsite. Now, I believe there's this this concept of the vault that you have to set up, right?
Yep.
You set up a vault for your backup, and when you go into the Azure portal, I believe, and then you get a key or a credential. I forget. I think it's set up.
Yeah,
right.
There's a password.
A password. Okay.
Yeah. Which, by the way, just so in case anybody asks, if you forget your password, we cannot help you in support. We cannot recover those. So don't forget your password.
That's good to know. And make sure at least two other people know it, yeah, just in case. So you set up this vault, and then at that point you can go into the portal, and it's very simplest form. If you've got servers on premises or some your own Hyper-V VMs on premises, you could download an agent, correct, to the VM. And that agent will then be, you can configure it to do the backup to your vault.
Mm-hmm.
And it's limited, the agent's limited to just, I believe, files and folders, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It can't take, I think Evan, you were saying earlier, you can't take a snapshot of the disk, or you cannot backup SQL or Active Directory or Exchange or any of those things.
Yeah, for those in our audience that are, you know, backup wonks, we don't take a VSS backup or a VSS snapshot, right? So so basically applications that were not VSS writer aware. So that's why you can't get a it's not consistent across every app at that point. So that's why you can only do files and folders to that.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's the basing. Now, you guys were mentioning about DPM earlier. Can somebody talk about that?
Evan, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure. So DPM is, you can kind of think about it like it's the enterprise version of, Windows Server Backup. It's designed to kind of be your backup solution for your company, right? And maybe enterprise is too big in this day and age. But it's kind of a centrally managed scenario, and it can back up, you know, things like SQL Server and SharePoint, where you have to have kind of a little bit of knowledge about a database is a special file, right? There's a certain way you have to back it up. DPM handles all of that, and DPM does do system state restores. So you can actually, you know, from bare metal is probably not the right word in this day and age with all the servers being virtual, but you can basically go down to, you know, rebuild the entire OS from scratch. It's not just files and folders. One of the neat things to DPM is you can actually run DPM in Azure to back up Azure VMs and on-premises VMs across site to site. So you could kind of move, not only are you moving your backup data off-site, but you're moving your backup service off-site, which even further reduces your on-premises.
Mm. Interesting. So that's through the VPN you can.
Yeah, through a site-to-site connection,
through
right?
Site-to-site connection.
Network at that point. Yeah, I think when the DPM kind of plugin for Azure or Azure plugin for DPM first released it, you couldn't run DPM in Azure. You had to run DPM on premises. I don't know if it was a service pack or their next release, but they added the ability to run it actually in Azure.
Yeah, I think the good use case, or what I had heard about this from some colleagues, was the one use case was, okay, so I have some VMs running in Azure, some IaaS VMs, and I have some workload running on them, and I want to do a system state backup. And how do I do that? Like, can I just use PowerShell? Can I snapshot it with blob storage, like the underlying blob storage? Like, how does that work? You know, and then it was like, can we do that, or what really ends up being supported to be able to pull off a, like a system state backup? And the response I heard, that we've talked about was DPM, right? It was, you know, using those other things does not guarantee consistency. The only way to really, from my knowledge, the only way to get a consistent backup of a VM like that was just power it down. And then you could, you know, do a bunch of different things with the underlying storage. But
yeah, that was the whole, that's the whole VSS writer stuff. Yep. is to allow that. But yeah.
Now you mentioned blob storage though. So this thing cannot back up the actual table blobs and queues, I believe. That you still have to use commandlets, or there's some, PowerShell commands, or there's some apps that, community apps that are available that can back up your tables, blobs, and queues today. But I don't think the software can do that, correct? Through Azure Backup.
Not that I'm aware of today.
Right. It doesn't have that level of integration where it can dip into your table, blob, and queue and pull stuff off it. So I just want to make that clear that I was doing some research yesterday, and there are a number of, free apps that people have written that essentially will do this. They can go and enumerate your entire table and, download it into a file onto your machine. And then I guess at that point you can, Azure Backup can pick that file up and save it off, into your vault. And the same for the blobs and the queues as well. It essentially just downloads everything onto your local machine and then you can have that saved off as well. When it comes to SQL Server and whatnot, can we, you mentioned DPM. Can DPM do SQL Server as well?
It can. It's kind of, I guess SQL Server Aware is the right terminology. But yeah, DPM can do it.
How about Exchange?
I'm not sure. I would typically, you kind of see SQL and Exchange go hand in hand, but I'm actually not sure. We'll do some digging and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but when I looked out there just recently, and this was from in September, so it might have changed since then, but it was from the start of September. I dropped a table in the notes there that you can post, Sajid, but it was from the blog from the backup guys. And it said, Windows Server, obviously the different flavors of that, 2012 and 2008, which you can't run up there in Azure now, but and SQL Server and SharePoint. And they said any workload outside of this table is not supported.
It's not supported. So it looks like Exchange is currently not supported, at least according to the latest information. Okay. But that's good. I think that covers a lot of ground, between DPM and the agent. You can really do a lot of stuff already. Excellent. Now, one thing I wanted to mention, which I read, which I'm sure might seem like pretty obvious, but worth mentioning anyway, is that because this stuff is constantly running and it's saving stuff up to the cloud, I believe it works in a way that it causes kind of minimal impact onto your IOPS of your existing VM, and it also tries to minimize the amount of effect it has on your bandwidth, because you think about it, otherwise this thing could really suck up all the bandwidth you got, because it's, especially on the initial upload when it's trying to take the first copy of your files or your system, it could be sending up a lot of data, and then subsequently it does only the deltas, but it's supposed to do it in a way that's fairly low touch and low impact. I believe it does use encryption, it does use compression, and things like that, just to try and save bandwidth and also make sure the data is sent up securely. Okay, that's anything else you want to mention on backup? Any other new updates for the service that we've missed? I know there's a bunch of links that we have. We'll put them into show notes. Anything else that we've missed, Cale, Evan?
I don't know. Given the list we went through, I can't believe we have, but I'm sure there's more stuff that got released.
Yeah, but there's a nice walkthrough I noticed on the Azure website. I was reading it yesterday. It talks about how you can just go up to the portal, create a vault. Just the simple steps. If you have a VM on premises or a physical machine, and you want to just try it out, as I said, you get the 5 GB free. You could run. You could back up a few folders on your machine and test it out and see how that works. And it shouldn't cost you anything. There's no cost for the actual data upload or download that you do through Azure Backup. They don't charge you for that. It's just the only thing you pay for is the data that's being stored in your vault. Once you go beyond 5 GB, then there's a cost that kicks in for every gigabyte. So I think it's 20 cents per gigabyte, I think, per month. Okay, that's all we have for today. Guys, thank you very much for all your insights into Azure Backup and all the other topics we talked about today. And
always a pleasure, Shadid.
Thank you again. And next week we'll record a couple of shows next week so that we can cover for our holiday week off, where most of us will be off, I believe. And that way, you know, we'll have enough of material for our listeners, even during the holidays, you know, should they want to download our podcast and listen to it.
I was going to say, maybe we'll put this out to the audience. If you listen to the session we publish on the 24th, send us a tweet and we'll mention you by name or something.
That's a very good idea. Yes, we will. You will get special mentioned on our show.
I mean, that is dedication, right?
Yes, I agree. All right, guys. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Later, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.